Hello and welcome to the Arrow Global Half Year 2024 Results. My name is Sergey, and I will be your coordinator for today's event. Please note this call is being recorded, and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on a listen-only mode. However, you will have an opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call. This can be done by pressing star one on your telephone keypad to register your question. If you require assistance at any point, please press star zero, and you will be connected to an operator. On the call today, we have Zach Lewby, Chief Executive Officer and Chief Investment Officer, and Phil Shepherd, Group Chief Finance Officer. I will now hand you over to your host, Zach Lewby, to begin today's conference. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Sergey. As you've seen from the results, we've made very significant steps forward in delivering our business goals so far in year-to-date 2024. As you'll also see as I go through some of the highlights, some of those things happened by 30 June, and we've noted it as such. Some of those things happened across July and August of this year, and we've noted as such, and I will try and highlight that as we go through these statistics and we go through the results. From a big-picture perspective, as you know, we are looking to build the integrated fund manager with a very strong franchise. On page three, I'm going to highlight where we've delivered in terms of key data points on our progression of delivering that business goal, talk through then how that improves and delivers the franchise, and then hand over to Phil to go through, obviously, all the more detailed financial outcomes. When I look at the franchise progression, the major event so far this year is that we did the first close of our discretionary lending fund. We've now closed about 650 million euros into that fund. We think that fund can achieve significant size and is very well received in the market. We're very pleased with the progression of that. So having acquired the 100% stake in Maslow less than 12 months ago, to then convert that into a fully discretionary fund at size and create a second substantial pillar alongside our Credit Opportunities Fund, we think is a major strategic progression. If you look at how that, alongside the growth of ACO plus several co-invests, has helped us expand the fund manager franchise, we've achieved 9.9 billion euros now of AUM, more than 20% up on a year ago. Obviously, we significantly welcome Adya's commitment to ALO as a strong anchor in that product, and they've supported us in the ACO product, so it represents a growing position. And obviously, with the CPPIB deal we announced in June, we continue to attract very high-quality investors who are using the franchise in a strong way, and I'll go through that when we go through the franchise pages in the next couple of pages. All of that has led to a 67% growth in the first half of the year in EBITDA from our IFM segment. That's 67% up, 33 million on 19 through June 30th. And obviously, we're building substantial enterprise value in that fast-growing and high-margin fund management business. We've also expanded into Germany and Spain with, I think, very smart acquisitions. Mitra gives us a very significant scale in Spain. I mean, we've now serviced 20,000 residential mortgages in Spain. We've got more than 15 billion of assets under management across Iberia. And so we have a very strong market position in that part of Europe. And in Germany, we were able to acquire a significant residential real estate capability at almost no cost. And the combined Mitra and Interboden acquisition costs were sub 3 million euros combined. So, I mean, without spending any substantial investment to obtain positions that are both relevant to ACO and our lending fund and AREO across Germany and Spain, I think that exceeded our expectations in terms of being able to add very quality platforms, both of which that we were able to acquire in extremely specific special circumstances and therefore finish off a substantial portion of our Western European footprint without additional acquisition expense. And I think that was important to us both from a franchise perspective and from a balance sheet optimization perspective. That's led to, off the stronger footprint, us deploying 954 million euros through August. We are on track to have by far a record year. Obviously, all of that is before ALO also joins the run rate. And so you should expect to see a very strong acquisition delivered by the end of the year in terms of that key metric. That metric is particularly important in our business model because the vast majority of our fees are charged on NAV and deployed capital, not on committed capital. And so deploying capital is the starting point of effectively the fee generation of our business model. And so seeing that number rise dramatically in the year-over-year period, comparing it to the same point last year and seeing what the outturn will be for the year, that's going to lead to strong growth. So you've seen our fund manager grow in EBITDA by 67% in the first half, and with origination growing strongly, that positive run rate is going to continue into 2025 and the years beyond. Collections were also strong through July. A significant amount of collections arrived post the 30th of June, and so we've kind of shown you where we are as of the end of July. We had a couple of lumpy collections in July, all of which were in the ERC, so it was all ordinary course activity. But I think, you know, we've obviously on previous calls had a lot of focus on the reduction of leverage. It is our top priority, and we agree with that focus completely. But delivering the 228 million that were collected through July, leaving us 150 million to collect in the final 5 months of the year to deliver the 378 million ERC, we have very good line of sight to that 150 million. And so I think all of that's important because on prior calls, I guess, particularly given the trailing 12-month period before now had included the sale of that UK portfolio to Intrum. We're now at the 3.9 times leverage without that in the denominator. And seeing that fall at the denominator while still reducing leverage from 4.2 to 3.9 is obviously good progress. We still have a goal to get to 3 in the medium term. And when you go through our forward roll and see the strong growth in fee income and when carry finally comes into the denominator, you can see the progression to that deleveraging through just the pull-through of our business model and the pull-through of the fee machine that comes with the larger AUM. But we are really pleased that by the end of July, net debt year-to-date has fallen by $54 million. And so you're also starting to see that reflect itself despite the significantly higher interest costs than we've had in the past. You see the pull-through of the business model finally reducing net debt in significant ways. We also, on top of that, won some very significant third-party asset management contracts in our servicing arm, so they're not as lucrative as our full discretionary funds, but they're still productive to growing just our general footprint for economies of scale and for future origination opportunities. If we move to page 4 and we focus on the franchise, what does all of that translate to into the integrated fund manager? We are progressing really well to having a strong Western European footprint. Our investors already see us as that. And so what we're building is within Western Europe against predominantly asset-backed positions. So as you see, we now lend against real estate through our Lending Opportunities Fund. We buy NPLs where often there's real estate collateral. And we have AREO, which is our real estate equity vehicle that we announced last year, and we're currently adding a second vehicle in that space. The platform is very clear and easy to understand, frankly. It's a Western European footprint. It operates in that asset-backed space. It tends to play on the granular local side of what in private markets speak is lower mid-market size point. And whether we're buying into our credit opportunities fund against that kind of collateral in that footprint, whether we're lending against that kind of collateral in our real estate lending fund, or whether we're deploying into real estate equity into that footprint, the underlying collaterals are extremely similar across all three activities. Obviously, the three different fund complexes represent different parts of the capital structure into those underlying collaterals and investment, but the expertise is shared across and the geography is consistent across each of the Western European activities. And so when you see some of the investor names I mentioned earlier, they are pleased to be able to access now more than our 20 platforms where we're providing truly local, closest to the asset origination across Western Europe. So instead of them having to, if they want to invest in Portuguese mortgages or Italian bankruptcies or UK real estate loans, or Dutch mortgages, instead of them having to find different operating partners for each of those underlying segments, they can work with us. We can provide a single Western European solution to access those harder to get, but higher margin and much more risk-adjusted, interesting, local access to asset-backed credit and real estate. And they can do that by a one-stop shop, and we're now at that point. I think that footprint gives us what we need to be incredibly relevant to investors who want Western European exposure into that asset-backed space. And I think the 20% plus growth you've seen in our AUM year on year and the ability to expand our funds in this environment is strong testament to the fact that the product we now offer to that investor universe is incredibly compelling. As we move to page five, it's a different view of the same story, frankly, but I think a helpful way of understanding the business, which is when you look at the platforms and you see what the size they have and what they're feeding, it really hopefully brings home the power of the model, which is that when you look at each of the local platforms on the columns, those are all wholly owned platforms. The one exception is RNHB that we own a fraction of, but everything else we own outright. And so when you then look at the AUM that you see there in the first row, all of that AUM represents assets that are on our platforms. So it's customers paying into our bank accounts. It's data where we are the system of record. I think we are now the system of record for more than 35 million separate loans and real estate assets in Europe. And so all of that gives us a very strong footprint from which to figure out what do you want to buy, where do you want to buy. And often, as you know, it's from our platform assets where we're already the source of the data and the customer's already paying into our bank accounts. And so it gives us a very strong incumbent advantage towards originating things that have greater off-market rates and greater familiarity than what you could get if you just had a London office and were out looking for assets. And I think particularly in these granular asset-backed categories, obviously all real estate, for example, is profoundly local. In a very fragmented European continent, having these local platforms as feed channels into the funds gives us a very, very unique business model and access to very differentiated origination, and that's what the LPs are rallying behind and committing in significant numbers to our strategies. And so you see as you move through the chart, obviously having expanded the countries, we've been able to expand the feed channels there and diversify the funds ever further. And you see which of the funds those platforms originate for. So on the credit side, the ticks there show you what feeds our ACO funds. On the lending side now, you see what feeds our ALO funds. And on the final row, you see what feeds our AREO funds. And so that's how the LPs see the business model, and that's how we operate it on the ground, which is basically by owning these platforms that service a substantial portion of the market. I mean, we now service 95 billion euros in assets. We have, significantly more than 2,000 people now. That gives us a very strong footprint to deliver differentiated origination into each of these fund strategies. And as we've signaled in previous quarters, we don't need substantially new platforms to now feed this much larger fund size. And so I think we've hit an efficiency point where we can now sweat the asset, delever, reduce net debt, as you've seen the results show in this quarter. If we move to page six, again, just summarizing our progress against our goals for the year, Our lending fund will continue to fundraise through the year, obviously. We've only had a first close, and that will substantially increase the amount of lending capacity. Our lending vehicles were already quite large, the ones we've acquired and used, and therefore that fund is scalable. We'll get to a significant size. In terms of a Western European footprint, obviously we've got a gap in France, which you'll note clearly from the map, but otherwise we feel like we've really nailed the Western European footprint, and so we don't need any substantial further capital to finish off the footprint. From a driving origination volumes, you've seen, you know, historically we've done between $1 billion and $1.2 billion. We did $954 million through August. I mean, we're going to put up a significant record year by the time we finish off ATO and ARIO deployment, which is what's in that 954 number, and add ALO deployment on top of that. I mean, the numbers are going to be very, very strong by the time we get to year end. Importantly, in this environment, we've had very strong realizations, both for ARIO balance sheet, as you've seen here, as well as for the funds, which are still trending well in terms of IRR. We've also distributed $80 million in the first half back to ACO investors, taking total lifetime distributions up to $176 million. We've also had a strong start to H2 distributions. Investors are pleased with the progress of realizing ACO 1, and I think that sets us up well alongside the strong performance of ACO 2 to raise ACO 3 in a powerful way next year. And all of that has obviously delivered the start of a significant deleveraging, of which you've seen us fall from the 4.2 times to the 3.9 and reduced $54 million of net debt so far year to date. Obviously, we know that's a key priority as we head into our own refinance in the coming years. And with that, I will pass you to Phil.
Thanks, Zach. Good morning, everyone. As usual, I will start by explaining the group's cash performance. As Zach has mentioned, there was significant activity post the end of June around both deployment and collections, and therefore I'll discuss both the position as at the end of June and also the position as at the end of July to provide a better and more helpful picture of the performance of the group. As I've explained in previous earnings calls, our collections profile is increasingly lumpy in nature given the greater proportion of real estate-backed portfolios. The collections for such portfolios are largely driven from the sale of the underlying real estate, and importantly, there is essentially no loss in value in a collection occurring in July rather than June. As shown on slide 8, collections for the seven-month period were $228 million, with ERC for the remaining 5 months being $150 million. This would deliver full-year collections of circa $378 million, in line with our expectations at the start of the year. The strong collections in the seven-month period have delivered a reduction in secured net debt of $54 million from the year-end, and a reduction in leverage from 4.2 times at the end of March to 3.9 times at the end of July. Collections for the six-month period were broadly in line with expectations, with actual collections being 98% of ERC. However, the leverage calculation no longer benefited from the one-off collection arising from the divestment of 50% of the UK portfolios, which occurred over 12 months ago in Q2 2023. As a result, the reported leverage temporarily spiked at the end of June, as the leverage calculation for that 1 month did not benefit from either the significant planned collections in July 2024 or the one-off divestment collection. The capital light EBITDA contribution has continued to grow, and we remain committed to the 3x leverage target, with further progress towards the target expected between now and the year end. Moving on to the capital light earnings and the segmental P&L analysis. Slide 9 has the integrated fund management segmental results, which represents the capital light revenues of the group from our integrated asset management and servicing and fund management activities. EBITDA has increased by 67% to $33.1 million for the six-month period. Reported revenues were up $40.7 million, or 41% year-on-year, driven by the increased management fees as fund NAV grows, the additional revenue from platforms fully acquired during the last 12 months, and the ongoing strong appetite for our services from third-party customers, with 43 new contract wins during the period. Consistent with previous quarters, the ongoing build of NAV and operational leverage continues to widen the EBITDA margin, increasing from 19.9% for H1 2023 to 23.6% for H1 2024. I expect both the EBITDA and EBITDA margin to continue to grow as we scale FUM, growing capital-light earnings, and in time recognising carried interest, with revenue growth continuing the trend of outpacing cost growth. The platform footprint has been further broadened with the expansion into Spain and Germany during H1 2024. Importantly, the group was able to execute both the acquisition of Emitra and acquire certain assets and teams from Interboden without the need to pay goodwill, and therefore the capital outlay was minimal. The progress in developing our three investment strategies and the ongoing build of our Western European footprint will ensure that the group can continue to expand origination, which in turn builds FUM and delivers capital-light earnings growth. As I've shown for the past few quarters, and so hopefully is now becoming familiar to you, slide 10 has the split of the IFM profitability by our core discretionary strategies and our local and ancillary platform strategies, and details the 67% year-on-year IFM EBITDA increase the group has delivered. Just to recap, the integrated returns delivered from our core discretionary strategies are the full capital-light fees generated from our discretionary funds, ACO, our real estate fund, ARIO, and in time, our lending fund. This includes not just management fees, but the asset management and servicing fees, and in turn carried interest on the activity for these fund investments. Typically, we are delivering a 40% return on capital invested based upon our 10% co-investment. This is broken down as circa 30% capital-light income, which is reported within the IFM segment, and circa 10% balance sheet investment return reported in the balance sheet segment. The capital-light EBITDA return of 30% can be further analysed, with broadly 10% generated from fund management fees, 10% from asset management and servicing fees, and 10% from carried interest. Based upon NAV of 2.8 billion euros at the end of the period, and an average NAV of 2.1 billion sterling, the EBITDA from our core discretionary strategies is circa 22 million, or 44 million on an annualised basis. This reflects the 20% derived from fund management fees and asset management and servicing fees, since carried interest is only recognised towards the end of the fund life. The second element relates to the returns from our local and ancillary strategies, which has grown to 5.3 billion euros of FAOM. This includes third-party asset management, fund administration and servicing activities, and the internal income generated by our platforms servicing the ARIO back book, which is an intra-segmental charge between IFM and the balance sheet segments. The returns on these activities typically blend to an average EBITDA margin of circa 15%, but like all our capital-light income, are extremely stable. Revenue has been particularly strong during the quarter, and the six-month period was 92 million, delivering an EBITDA of circa 14 million for the period. Thirdly and lastly, there's been the ongoing costs of circa 3 million to drive future revenue. This creates a drag to the segmental EBITDA and has decreased from the 10 million for the full year 2023. Combining these three elements enables a full understanding of the EBITDA for the IFM segments for the period and shows the strong progression that the group is making in driving the growth in capital-light earnings in line with our strategy. Slide 11 shows the results for the balance sheet segments. This segment reflects the investment returns of the back book investments, along with the returns generated on our co-investments in our discretionary funds, such as ACO and AREO. EBITDA has increased by 16.4 million to 33 million for the period. The year-on-year improvement is primarily driven by two factors. Firstly, the results for the prior year were impacted by the divestment of the UK portfolios with no revenue or costs reported within the underlying results in H1 2023. The results for this year include revenue and costs on the 50% retained by Arrow and amounted to an EBITDA of 6.6 million for the first half. Secondly, following our usual re-evaluation of our ERC, there was a year-on-year improvement of 9.3 million on the non-cash write-down of our investment portfolios. The collections performance is shown on slide 12. As I had noted in previous quarters, this is a significant collections year, with full year collections across the back book and our share of the OCO and AREO collections expected to be 378 million. Performance for the 7 months to the end of July represents significant progress against these expectations, with 228 million collected to date. The ERC for the remaining 5 months of the year is 150 million, in line with our expectations at the start of the year. The planned collections in July totaled 100 million and arose on a number of portfolios which had delivered minimal collections in the prior 18 months. For the 6 month period ended June 2024, collections were 128 million. And represented 98% of the ERC. The group continues to focus on cash performance and across all types of portfolios and all geographies. Our local platforms continue to demonstrate their ability to drive and accelerate collections performance. I believe our ERC continues to reflect assumptions in line with the broader economic outlook, and the strong collections profile through the remainder of 2024 is expected to lead to strong free cash flow generation and good progress towards our leverage target of 3x. Moving on to the group segment, which is shown on slide 13 and primarily relates to the centrally controlled overhead costs. The segmental costs are broadly consistent with prior year, with a cost of 15.7 million for H1 2024 against 15.4 million in the prior year. Group segmental costs are reflective of a business scale to deliver volumes of 1.5 to 2 billion euros per annum without any need for significant group segmental cost increases. The full underlying income statement is shown on slide 14, which shows the EBITDA segmental results that I have already explained. Despite the ongoing increase in interest cost, the losses have been significantly reduced from 24.3 million to 5.1 million for H1 2024, with the ongoing growth in fee-paying NAV driving the growth in capital-light earnings and the improved profitability reported within the balance sheet segment. Finance costs increased as the impact of rising interest rates continue. Financing costs were 53.6 million, 3 million higher than prior year. In addition, as the group grows the euro income, predominantly due to the growth in management fees and in due course carried interest in our funds, the group is maintaining a euro net liability position. The retranslation of this liability position gives rise to some non-cash P&L volatility and was a 3.6 million gain in the period against a gain of 7.3 million reported last year.
Moving to slide 15 and the detailed breakdown of the free cash flow generation. Given the significant planned realizations made during July, the chart shows the position for the seven-month period. Free cash flow generation was $143.4 million, with free cash flow generation after portfolio investments of $65.3 million. During the six-month period in H1  2023, the cash flow generation after investments was $71.8 million and benefited from the divestments of 50% of the U.K. portfolios for $91.5 million during Q2 2023. Slide 16 shows the net debt position. Total net debt as at the end of July was $47 million lower than at the end of the year, driven by the growth in capitalized earnings and strong collections for the seven-month period. This was a marked shift from the six-month period, where there was a $31 million increase in net debt. The strong collections profile for the remainder of 2024, together with the growth in capitalized integrated fund management EBITDA, is expected to lead to net debt reduction for the full year and is in line with our strategic goals of reducing leverage and net debt. Slide 17 shows our leverage and funding position as at the end of July. The growing capitalized income and free cash flow after investments has driven the reduction in leverage of 0.3x since March 2024 to 3.9x at the end of July, and the reduction in secured net debt of $54 million over the seven-month period. The group continues to make good progress to our medium-term target of 3x, and further deleveraging remains a core focus. Leverage has decreased from 4.8x at the end of 2021, shortly after the Tate private transaction. We have a strong funding base with no bond maturities until 2026 and significant levels of liquidity headroom. Our 120-month ERC was $1.2 billion, with over 60% of our ERC reported net of servicing costs, and this percentage continues to rise. The strong free cash flow generation expected during 2024, together with growth in our capitalized earnings, leaves us well-placed to continue to progress the expansion of our integrated fund manager model across credit, real estate and lending. This, in turn, further drives capitalized revenue growth without placing strain on our balance sheet and creates significant enterprise value, facilitates net debt reduction and further deleveraging towards the strategic leverage commitment of 3x. Thank you, and I'll now hand back to Zach.
Thanks, Phil. So just closing on page 19, I guess re-summarizing where we're at. Where we are year to date is significant progress against our goals for the year. We're pleased that you are starting to see some of the benefits of the business model pull through. We are able to deploy much larger amounts across more strategies, each of which have strong funds against them, whilst deleveraging simultaneously. We've now delivered a majority of the collections for the year and have good line of sight to the rest of the collections to deliver that. I guess that's been a point of focus on prior calls, and so we wanted to highlight the progress in that regard, which, fair enough, came after 30th of June, but is now done in July. And that has delivered us a lower leverage position and a good trend down, even with the sale of the UK portfolios now out of the denominator. We continue to perform strongly on ACO 1, ACO 2. They remain very strong flagships for the franchise, and ALO, I think, is a very high potential addition to that lineup with strong sponsorship from a great list of LPs. All of that has already shown a 67% gain year-on-year in the EBITDA of the fund manager, and with that additional origination volume pulling through into NAV, which then pulls through into fee earning for both management fees and servicing fees, you'll continue to see strong growth in that metric, with carry further enhancing that metric in coming years. all of which has led to a good progression in deleveraging, albeit we accept completely that more deleveraging needs to occur to get to a more attractive and sustainable capital structure. But we think we're well placed and continuing to make good progress.